It's a Thursday edition of Locked On Warriors. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat writer for the Mercury News. Make sure to follow Locked On Warriors on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you get podcasts for episodes every day, Monday through Friday. Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room because it was recorded on Locker Room. Download the app and join me at WC Goldberg to get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Bram and I are going to talk for about 10 or 15 minutes and then open it up to some calls and questions and things like that. But we've got some people joining now, Bram, so we might as well get started. For those of you who know me, Wes Goldberg, host of Locked On Warriors, being joined now by Bram Hilsman, who is making his locker room debut. He is the host of the very popular Warriors podcast, Warriors Huddle. So, Bram, you and I connecting for the first time on this app. 10 games left. The Warriors are playing in Minnesota tonight. A lot going on with this game, a lot of context around it. You obviously have Andrew Wiggins playing his first game back in Minnesota since he was traded. And then, of course, you have the Minnesota pick and everything that's involved in that and where that's going to ultimately fall. So my question to you to kick this thing off, what has more short-term value or this Minnesota pick?
Say that again. You broke up. What has more value, what or the Minnesota pick?
What has more short-term value to Golden State, Andrew Wiggins or the Minnesota pick?
Short-term value, I would say Andrew Wiggins. Long-term, obviously, it's got to be the Minnesota pick. But why I'm saying short-term right now, whomever it is, let's say we get lucky. Let's say the pick comes to us and it's the number four overall. Whoever that person is, regardless of how impressive their career is ultimately going to become, their ability to contribute to a championship run next year, or maybe even for the next couple of years, is not going to match Wiggins's yet. It's just not. It's a practical reality of playing in the league, right? The guy is going to need some time to get their own skill set up and then some time to figure out how he contributes to the Warriors. So between those two, I would definitely say the Minnesota pick. And I'll also say I'm feeling kind of weird and nervous about this Minnesota game. I got all fired up for that Dallas game, Wes. I was ready to go. I'm telling people this is the playoffs. It's starting. The team is competent. You know, let's go. Then we show up, and I don't know if we're allowed to cuss on the locker room. I assume we are. Then they show up, and they shit the fucking bed, you know. And I've spent the last 2 days trying to regain my confidence and assume that they're going to show up again in Minnesota. But I'm gun-shy, man. I'm weirded out a little bit.
The Warriors have tended to respond well to these blowout losses. They lost by 53 points to Toronto. They lost the next game to Atlanta. Okay. But then the next game, they get a 1-point win over Milwaukee, and that basically kicks off their best stretch of the season, right? So the question, I guess, is this an Atlanta game after the Toronto blowout where you lose to a team that you think you should probably beat? And it turns out, by the way, that the Hawks were pretty good. We didn't really know that back then because those were like the early stages of the Nate McMillan era. But do they respond in a way that can basically prolong this stretch over the next 10 games and make the Dallas blowout just a blip on the radar, right?
Yep.
That to me is the key. Kent Bazemore coming back will be helpful. I've seen things saying that Damian Lee and Kent Bazemore being out against Dallas. Look, if you're getting blown out by 40 points because Kent Bazemore and Damian Lee aren't in your rotation, you have bigger problems. Not saying that those guys weren't helpful players, but you got really big problems if that's your issue.
I also need some emotional guidance from the Warriors. I need them to tell me as a fan, should I be all the way in or should I just be casually happy that they're still, you know, progressing and that we're going to make the play-in game? Because that last streak, you know, when they went 7-3, they sucked me back in, Wes. I opened up my vulnerability. I was now having expectations for the games. And then they just pissed in my face with that, you know, with this Dallas game. So I just want to know, you know, like I'm okay. I've developed decades worth of like heavy skin when the Warriors are crappy. I know how to deal with that. But I need to know how we're doing this going forward, because this whole one foot in, one foot out thing, I'm going to need psychological help before the end of the season.
I think that you're still on the right track where you are emotionally, because this is a play-in team, right? Like, at the very least, that stretch cemented their status as a play-in team. They're, no matter what, barring a collapse, like a ridiculous collapse, they're three games up, right, on New Orleans for this 10th seed, four games up on New Orleans for this 10th seed. You've got to really screw stuff up to fall out of the play-in tournament altogether. Now, the goal, with that Dallas loss, you lose the chance, really, realistically, to get the sixth seed and avoid the play-in altogether. And honestly, I think the Dallas stuff, the importance of that game was overblown. The odds of the Warriors catching Dallas were really slim even before losing to the Mavericks. And the fact that they lose by 40 has nothing to do – it doesn't impact their place in the standings. It just means that they lost, and a loss is a loss in the standings.
What about the longer term? So I'm anxious to hear what the rest of this locker room has to say about this, right? But I'll be honest with you, you know, so publicly, when I'm talking about the Warriors, we are all talking about, all right, the goal for this year is to make the playoffs, you know, and see what happens. But not so privately, when I'm talking with my boys around drinks, or at least when I was allowed to do that, or when I'm thinking about this season, that's not what I want, Wes. What I want this to be is the runway to the Warriors getting back to contention. You know, I know they're not going to be in contention this year, but I want to see the signs, the optimism of like why they might be there next year. You know, and we were starting to see it. I was starting to see the system in play. Wiseman goes down and you can see how these guys actually fit. And then, you know, that last game was a little bit of a piss in the face to that notion. So, I mean, I get, of course, one loss, it is what it is, you know, you move on. But it's one of those things where if next year, you know, Klay doesn't play more than 60 games and the Warriors aren't close to contention, we're going to look back at games like that Dallas one, like, oh, yeah, there were some signs. You know, this isn't coming out of nowhere.
I think the blowout stuff has been a little bit overblown by Warriors fans. I mean, this is happening all around. Even last night, like, Philadelphia beat Atlanta, which we've established is a good team, by 40 points. I mean, these blowouts are just happening this season more often for some reason. And I don't know if it's because the three-point shot has been taking in higher volume more than ever. And so these, you know, what used to be a 15-point margin is now a 25 or a 30-point margin and all these things. But or just, you know, the pandemic stricken season, just the weirdness of that and the condensed schedule and the fatigue that can set in randomly. But I'm less concerned about that. And I do think that there's a runway happening here with the Warriors. And I liken the games to what Phoenix did last year in the bubble, going 8-0 in the bubble and just barely missing the playoffs, because it was a little bit late for them to make that run. And with the Warriors, it may make the run to the sixth seed, right? But they can still make this, you know, play-in tournament, and whatever happens, happens. But this run at the end of the year could be sort of that thing, that launching pad for them to maybe make a Phoenix Suns type of run next year, right? Where Phoenix is – they have the second-best record in the NBA, which is insane. Their record is better than Brooklyn. It's better than Philadelphia. It's better than Milwaukee. It's just it's one game shy of Utah. The Suns are really damn good, and you look up and down that roster, and you're like, boy, like, where's all the talent? It's pretty top-heavy, right, with Chris Paul and Devin Booker. The Warriors would have to use a similar sort of a similar kind of formula where, hey, you've got Steph Curry playing at an MVP level. You got Klay Thompson coming back and Draymond Green and Andrew Wiggins and whatever, but really it's going to be Steph Curry-led. And then a bunch of high-level role players, which would be the best-case scenario. And well, I guess we could talk about how the Warriors established that. But that, to me, would be the formula, is confidence from the prior season. You've got Steph Curry leading the thing. And then you've got 9 or 10 guys who can just play. And you don't really have a weakness. And I think that's what the Warriors have found, with James Wiseman being out and some other things that have happened. They've found a lineup and a rotation lately that has like kind of smoothed out the weaknesses. There's not really a place where the opponent can just poke at for 48 minutes and then win the game anymore like there used to be.
Well, and they also have a roster that fits within Kerr's system again, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they can now run a series of wings, a bunch of guys between 6'6 and 6'8 who can pass well and look for a great shot as opposed to a good shot. This is like tangentially related at best, but the connection being Chris Paul. So I've been thinking about, I am assuming, maybe it's a stupid assumption, but I'm assuming the Warriors make the playoffs. I assume they get to the play-in, then I think they actually, you know, make its way into the real dance. And I've been thinking on who do I want the Warriors to play in the first round? And I don't have a specific answer to that. I mean, I think it's Utah, I'm not sure, but I'm going to give you the answer to an associated question. Here's who I don't want them to play. Phoenix. So for obvious reasons, talent, you know, our matchup doesn't work out that best, but that's not why I'm saying it. The reason I'm saying it is, you know who I do not want to fucking lose to in a playoff series and then have to watch? Chris Paul. There's no way I'll be able to handle that well. Even if the Warriors are huge underdogs, even if they're not expected to, you know, pull out even more than a six-game series, the idea of watching his smug face go through a victory over the Warriors in the playoffs, I can't handle it, Wes. Like, there's no way, man. I'll lose my shit. So I'm really hoping that's not how this plays out.
Of course, you take a pessimistic approach to that question, right? Because I've been asked that question, who's the best matchup in the first round? You're like, screw the matchup. Worst case scenario, what would make me most miserable? And you're saying that a loss even to – so I guess the teams that would be in the running would be – the Lakers have fallen too far off. So any – and the Clippers, they're three games back of Utah for the first seed, two games back of Phoenix. You would rather lose to Kawhi Leonard's emotionless face and Paul George's, I guess, eventual playoff explosion, playoff blossoming.
Yes, I wouldn't enjoy it. But yes, I've already lost to the Kawhi robot thing. I know how that feels. You know, I have some protections there. I don't have the same FU relationship with Paul George that I do with CP3 for whatever reason. And I'll turn it into an optimistic thing. Here's why I would like them to play. It's the Jazz. And I'm sure that we'll have, I don't know, a basketball related analysis on this. But instead, I'll give you a neurotic one. The other side to that, you know, who would I not like to lose to, Coin, is who would I like to see suffer? Jazz fans. I'd like to see them go down. And it feels like in a Black Lives Matter, new society, it would be really appropriate to watch their racist ass goes down. So that's what I'm hoping.
I hadn't thought of that. I was also thinking that Utah would be a good bet for storylines, right? Because their best player, Rudy Gobert, shut down the season last year. And how storybook would it be if the Jazz came out and won the championship in the pandemic-stricken season the following year? I thought that would be very storybook and quite honestly, like, kind of nice and fairy tale and deserving. But now you're telling me the other big thing that happened last summer, other than the pandemic, the Black Lives Matter movement, is kind of having the opposite narrative effect on Utah. I love that. I have no idea now where I stand.
I mean, I have already revealed how I stand, so I don't have to do it again. But that's ultimately where I'm hoping this goes.
Okay. I think before we open this up to callers, I honestly don't know who would be the better matchup for the Warriors, and I don't really think it matters all that much in the theme of pessimism that we've been having right now. If they somehow get into the 7-8 game, and I think it's possible over these next 10 games, they have a super soft schedule. I don't think getting into the 7-8 game is out of the question. You would just have to win one game, and even if you lose, you can win that following game and still get in as the eighth seed. So you would have two chances instead of one to get into the playoffs. So let's say they get into that 7-8 game and they win and they play the two seed, or they end up or you end up as the eighth seed somehow by losing or whatever.
Sure.
I think that the Warriors, the best matchup for them, I still think would probably be Phoenix out of that group. You know what? I take that back. If the Clippers can move up, I think that's the best. Maybe that's the best matchup.
I think
the Warriors can outscore the Clippers. And I know that's crazy because the Clippers have been so good, especially on offense. They have one of the best offenses in the league. But they are a jump shooting team in a way that I think is at least opens up the – like all three of those teams are much better than the Warriors this year. But I think the Clippers are a jump-shooting team in the way that it opens up the door to like a Houston Rockets in the Western Conference Finals, like just 20 straight misses kind of thing. And with Steph Curry, if he just goes off, that would just open up the door.
Puncher's chance. Of course. I mean, so here, let me drop humor, drop neurosis, and give you an actual answer. So do I think the Warriors have a shot in the first round? Fuck yes, I do, Wes. Anytime you are looking at a matchup between two teams, one of the first questions you're going to ponder is, well, which team has the best player in this series? I don't care who they play. I don't care if it's the Clippers. I don't care if it's the Suns. I don't care if it's the Lakers. I don't care who they play. I think the answer to that question will be Steph. So do the Warriors have a puncher's chance? Absolutely. So now am I picking who would I like to play? Well, in order for that puncher's chance to go forward, what I don't want is real veteran leadership on the other side, because that's the kind of thing that would stop Magic. You know, when We Believe was rolling along, there wasn't a CP3 in Dallas to make sure that the ship was righted. So would I like to avoid Phoenix? I would. I absolutely would. And I think that the Clippers, you know, we know for sure they have always kind of had a void of leadership. I don't think Rondo fixes that, at least immediately. And I'm not worried about the Jazz having somebody either who can make sure that the ship is righted. So, you know, would I bet money on the Warriors in the first round? No. But do I think that this is a foregone conclusion? I don't. I absolutely don't.
We'll be right back, but first let's talk about Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing number of vehicle makes and models, it can be impossible to stock all the parts you need for your car, especially now while you might not be able to visit a traditional store. So do it easily online at rockauto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything you need, from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all of the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, and then write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. Before we open up this to callers, if you had to rank the teams that the Warriors could face in the play-in tournament, and then if they make it out of the play-in tournament in the first round of the playoffs. So these are the teams. These are the cities. San Antonio, Memphis, Portland, Utah, Phoenix. Rank those five in order of number one, where you most would want to live, and number five, where you would least want to live. Let's start at number one and then work our way down.
You got to give me the list again. I didn't write them down.
Utah, how about Phoenix.
Give me yours, and I'll see if because I am wandering back and forth as we're talking. I always talk better if I move, so I can't write this down. So give me your list, and okay. I'll see if I agree.
I already forgot what I was supposed to do. So one is going to be most livable, and five is going to be least livable.
Least livable. All right. So number one.
That was the original rules, but those are the rules now. Most livable. I think I'm going to throw some people off. Most people would say Portland. I'm going to say Memphis is most livable for me. Go ahead.
I don't know shit about Memphis. Talk me into it. I've never been there. You know, like I think barbecue, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
I've seen the movie The Firm, and I think that was set there, but I doubt it was a documentary. So, you know, I don't have a lot of Memphis knowledge.
Small city, but a city with everything you kind of need, unless you're looking for salad, then they don't have that. good barbecue, good cheap drinks, great local music scene. East Coast, which gives it points over it's like mid East Coast versus Pacific Northwest, where you can't go outside 9 months out of the year. So I like that too. And I like the college town feel. And I like the fact that I could walk everywhere if I'm living in downtown Memphis. Portland, I love downtown Portland, but it's just too damn cold too long of the year. And that's the only, it's a close one, but that's my number two.
I would have said Portland number one just because I have no Memphis knowledge, but a friend of mine had a bachelor party in Portland, and when we were there, we hit a strip club, and there was somebody in that strip club dressed like a clown, like a depressive or depression-era clown, like when you're like one of the sad clowns. Like, I mean, face, makeup, like the whole nine yards. Wasn't working there, was just there, and not only was he attending, but like nobody seemed to be upset that this dude was at a strip club wearing fucking clown makeup. And that screwed me up so much. What it said about that town, like how many times do people just see random clown makeup and not freak out? I want to say Portland, but I can't. because of the strip club clown thing, man. So I'm going to, you know, I'm going Memphis. I'll go Memphis with you. And then
was the clown Connor by any chance?
You know, I wasn't sure if we could talk about that openly, but that's actually how we started a friendship. Is I ultimately just went up to him and talked to him. It's like, wait a minute, Connor? Oh my God, which was really strange.
I don't know why I'm making Phoenix so low. I don't know if it's the politics of Arizona, but Phoenix is sunny. I always have a good time in Arizona. I actually might make Phoenix my number two over Portland because I'm a weather guy and weather matters to me.
Too hot and like fairly racist, isn't it? I'm out on Portland.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's politically, it's a little too right leaning for me. And I don't know if that, I don't know how many listeners we're offending right now, but just, you know, personally speaking,
unfortunately enough, if as long as Connor isn't on here, I think we're okay.
Logan says that in the chat that Phoenix is too hot. That's true. Like if I would rather, I err on the side of if it's too hot or too cold, I prefer too hot. Like if I'm going to, at least I could just take clothes off. Where in the cold, I might not have the necessary clothes to bundle myself warm. So
I've lived my entire life in California. If it gets above or below 68 degrees, I bitch uncontrollably.
To round it out, Utah would be 4, San Antonio would be 5. I've always had a good time in San Antonio, but I'm not living there.
Does Utah know that you're Jewish? You may want to knock that down to 5, man.
That's true. You know what? San Antonio goes up. Also, you could buy coffee and alcohol anytime you want in San Antonio, where in Utah they have like weird limits on it. I tried to buy a coffee at a hotel at a Courtyard and or a Courtyard Marriott, and they said, we don't sell coffee before like 9 or something. And I was like, that's when everybody needs it. Like, when are you selling it then? Like, are you selling it at 5 p.m.? I don't understand.
This is related. I went on a business trip to Phoenix once, stayed in a hotel that had a Starbucks at the bottom of it. One of the things I do on business trips is drink copious amounts of alcohol on my own. And I went into the Starbucks and they were selling beer there, which was weird enough. And so I pull out a six pack, try to buy it. And the woman looks at me with as much judgment as she could possibly muster and said, sir, you can buy this, but you can't leave the Starbucks. You know, I guess nobody ever bought it. You have to drink it here. It's not the type of alcohol license we have. And she started to take it to put it back into the container. I was like, oh, no. Reached out, grabbed it, sat in the corner and drank 6 individual beers while everybody judged me for about a 25-minute period. It was, you know, it was good times, dude. It was fantastic. It felt like being home while my wife judged me.
All right. On that note, I think it's time to open it up to some callers here. We had some speaker requests. I'm not sure what happened to them. I know that Noah and Chef Curry were trying to request to speak. So if you want to talk with Bram and I, just request to speak here on the Locker Room app. I will say this while we're waiting for some of those to trickle in, Bram. One more story about Utah. I did try to buy a beer at a bar and they said, we can't sell it to you. Again, there's like weird time constraints there. We cannot sell it to you now unless you buy some food. And I was like, well, what do you have? And they said, well, we can just give you a bag of Lay's. And I was like, all right, fine. How much is it? And they're like, we'll give it to you for like $1. And I was like, all right, cool. Here's the dollar. And so I understand like culturally that's part of living in Utah and specifically in Salt Lake City. But they really don't take it all that seriously, do they, if that's all it takes? So,
if they were taking it really seriously, they should have told you the Lay's was $1,000. It's like, no, the drinks are pretty cheap, dude. But this bag of chips is going to cost you a considerable amount.
For a beer and a bag of chips, it'll be $1,003. Thank you.
Yeah. I'd do it. Right. I mean, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
Noah, what do you have for us, man?
Oh, hey, how's it going, guys? Noah. Hi, Brad. How's it going? I got a couple questions. Knowing now that the 6th seed actually is out of the question, how concerned are you about the Warriors actually making it in the 10th seed, considering how well the Wolves are playing? They still have 3 more against the Pelicans, and they're playing well. And they still have Utah and Phoenix who are fighting for the first seed. So I'll take that one first.
After you, Les.
I just to clarify the question, how worried are we that the Warriors will hold on to the 10th seed or make the playoffs from coming out of the 10th seed, like in the play-in tournament?
Just making the play-in tournament.
Like I'm not concerned at all. They have a 4-game lead on New Orleans with 10 games left. I mean, it would take a really crazy collapse to lose that at this point. And granted, like if they lose four games over this stretch, and they have all these games against New Orleans coming up, I guess that they could. But as long as they take care of business against these other teams and just make sure that you don't lose every – and just make sure you win the series against New Orleans, I'm really not all that worried about it. And look, I know the Dallas thing has a bad taste in everybody's mouth. I think that the Warriors that we saw going into that Dallas game over the last several games before that are more representative of what the Warriors will look like over the next 10 than that team that lost by 30 to Dallas. So I'm not all that concerned.
I'll piggyback on Wes, Noah, and also let me shout out to Noah, Patreon supporter for the huddle. We love you. Thank you for being here, man. But I agree with Wes. I agree with Wes for all the reasons he stated. And I'll add this. So the Warriors hadn't practiced for a while, right? And they finally got back to practice yesterday. And one of the people who was made available to the media was Steve Kerr. And what Kerr made it crystal clear was that it's not just us who is worried about the Warriors' performance against Dallas, and that the entire organization recognizes that the playoffs have already started, that these next 10 games are just as important as a playoff game would be. And assuming he's been successful in communicating that, and well, that's one of the things that Kerr can do, I hope, is communicate to the locker room. If these boys are showing up to play with this lead, with a four-game lead, I feel confident they're going to get it.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's mostly me being a neurotic late 80s, early 90s Warriors fan.
Attaboy.
But my last question is actually, since they're going to be probably a 9 or 10 seed, they may have two lottery picks. Is there a chance that they're going to use one of those and not keep both? Or are they going to actually keep both and actually have like three now 19 to 20-year-olds with Steph on this roster? And thanks a lot.
Thank you, Matt.
Graham, I've answered questions like this a few times on this app, so I'm going to defer to you here.
I want them to trade it. We over the last few weeks have covered very similar questions as well. And really where I land is we right now have the pleasure of watching the most talented player who will ever play in a Warriors jersey in Steph Curry. That's just a practical reality from my standpoint. And if I'm right about that, then that means over these next few years is probably our best chance at another title. And they need to go all the way in. This relates back to the question you asked me to start the pod or the locker room section. Mm-hmm. What's more valuable, Wiggins or the pick? What I want them to do is give something to Curry to work with while he was still in this ascension, still in this prime. So I hope that they trade it. What do I think they do? I think that they don't. I think that they keep all picks. I think that Lacob wants two title windows for a series of reasons, one of which, and this is complete conjecture. No one's told me this. This is just a guess. But one of which is money concerns. They built Chase Center. They wanted this thing to be a, money magnet. And then before their first season, everything shuts down. They can't make a single dollar after it. And it wouldn't surprise me if right now, if Lacob in the deepest recesses of his heart, if he could choose between a title in the next 3 years or asses and seats in 10, I think he picks the latter. I think he wants to make sure that people are going to be coming to the games in 10 years from now. And what that means is holding on to assets like Wiseman, the Minnesota pick, and whomever the Warriors can draft. So I don't think they trade him. I think they hold on to it all.
I think that the Warriors would be prepared to pick somebody if they end up with one of these with a top. At this point, it would be a top six pick from Minnesota, right? It would be number if the Warriors get it would be 4, 5, or 6.
Yep.
Orlando and Minnesota are very close. There is a chance that Minnesota can end up with the third best odds, and then the Warriors would have an opportunity to get picks 4 through 7. But if it lands in the top three, obviously it conveys to the Timberwolves. I do think that the best case scenario for the Warriors is that the pick does not convey and stays with Minnesota and becomes unprotected next year. And I say that because I don't know. I think the three guys that would help the Warriors are going to be off the board by the time the Warriors even pick. And the worst thing they could do, I thought Jalen Green would be a nice addition for the Warriors. I'm sure that the Warriors have done their homework on Jalen Green, given how local he is. But to me, he's a little too raw. And what you're seeing now from Jordan Poole, I like Jordan Poole. You wouldn't not take Jalen Green because you have Jordan Poole. But I do think that Jordan Poole is ready to contribute in a way that would be very similar to what Jalen Green can do, at least next year, right?
Sure.
And so You have Jordan Poole coming off your bench as your score, your microwave scoring guard. That would basically be the role that Jalen Green could play within his first few years in the league. Jonathan Kuminga, to me, has all the upside in the world, but is so raw that you'd be dealing with another player like James Wiseman. And if you want to win a title next year, you can't afford to give that many minutes to basically rookies. And I'm still going to call James Wiseman a rookie next year. I don't care about any of this stuff. You can't afford to put two raw rookies, 19, 20-year-olds, in your core rotation, in your top nine or even 10, and expect to compete for a title. It just doesn't work. That's not what happens in the NBA. You need guys who are ready to who are veterans, who have been around the league and who know how to win at that sort of level in a way that rookies don't. I think you can get away with one. I think you can get away with Wiseman just being big JaVale McGee or something, or year two DeAndre Ayton or whatever it looks like. I think you can get away with that. But to do that with two would be tough. The only rookies who I think can actually walk in and contribute are Cade Cunningham and Jalen Suggs. And I don't think either of them have fallen out of the top three. Maybe Suggs falls to four and the Warriors get lucky. And if the Warriors end up at number four and Suggs is on the board, that is a home run and you do it, and that's the best possible scenario. But anything outside of that, I think the Warriors would be better off just that pick and bang as an unprotected pick in 2022, and then you have that as trade bait. And this lottery pick, whether or not they keep it or not, or their own top 20 protected pick, whether they keep it or not, to me, is so it's so inconsequential to me. I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think you could package that with the fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh pick and move up substantially in the draft. I don't think that has as much value as people think that there is. And if you do keep it, the player you're getting isn't going to be part of your rotation anyway. So if you want to get somebody young with some upside at that pick, fine, do it. And maybe that player just rides the bench for a year or two. That pick to me is so inconsequential. To me, the Minnesota pick is huge. And if I just still think, to go back to our conversation about Phoenix and Utah and all these teams, if you can just somehow turn that pick, whether it's Jalen Suggs or a veteran contributor or whoever, into somebody who can help you right away, I think Steph Curry has deserved that. He showed that over this recent stretch. Like, this dude is playing the best he's ever played in his career, which is insane when you really think about what that sentence means, and it's absolutely true. It's not even up for debate at this point. And you're going to screw around with drafting rookies? No. Go out and win something right now. And I think the Warriors owe that to him. I know that was a long-winded answer, Bram, but
no, I don't really see the other option. I'll echo it in a sentence. We all know how amazing Steph Curry is. If they had an opportunity to draft Steph Curry, literally a rookie Steph Curry, this year, in this offseason, next year, that rookie Steph Curry would not be able to contribute to the championship run. He wouldn't be ready. You know, we've watched him develop, and we are all singing his praises. So the idea that if they did, you know, thread the needle and get a top five pick next year, that guy could come in and immediately contribute is probably a pipe dream. It's a future analysis kind of thing.
They're trying to have their cake and eat it too. Support for today's show comes from Bet Online. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. The NBA is making the playoff push, and the NHL season and Major League Baseball are in full swing. Bet Online even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost everything you can imagine. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, but only when you use the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Chef Curry was the next one on here. What's up, man?
Hey, how y'all doing?
Pretty good, man.
How are you? I'm doing all right. So, just I guess to keep it on the young guys' perspective, I'm really, really high on James Wiseman, and I guess I'm asking for a reality check because I've watched good bigs, I've watched bad bigs, and at the end of his rookie season, James Wiseman was a walking 14 points a game, like literally just running the floor, being big, strong, and fast, like. And as far as the meniscus tear, I think it's like I don't even necessarily consider it a setback as much as like an obstacle, something to get over. But I just don't see him regressing, like being any worse than he was at the end of last year. So I guess my question would be, A, what do you think James Wiseman can be by the playoffs next year? And B, how good does he have to be in a Western Conference Finals for you to feel comfortable with the Warriors, like having a real chance at getting.
I think that's a great question, man. And I would hold on because you've come to the right two people. If I had to guess, we'll find out. But if I had to guess, Wes is going to be pessimistic, you know, and I'm going to be overly optimistic. So you're going to have to sift somewhere through the middle. But I'm going to combine your two questions, right? Do I think or how good do I think Wiseman will be next year, and how good does he have to be in order to contribute? It's going to depend on who they are playing in that Western Conference Finals. If we are lucky enough, we get back there, and now we're looking at the Lakers, who have a giant front court. That's going to require a lot more from Wiseman, and I don't think, as much as I believe in his future, because the latitudes that you just heaped on him, I agree with, man. I believe in this dude's future. But I don't think he will have progressed enough next year to be able to face a Lakers front court. But if that's not who it is, if we, you know, if the Jazz are back there, or Phoenix, or even the Clips, if someone who doesn't have a real competent front court is our opponent, then if Wiseman can just get to what Wes was talking about, a rim-running specialist who helps us on the defensive end, you know, JaVale McGee on steroids, then I do. I think he'll be ready to contribute then, and then hopefully, you know, we fast-forward 4 or 5 years, and he goes from JaVale McGee to somebody closer to Chris Bosh, or, you know, all the ceiling players that we hoped he'd become. Wes, prove me wrong. Hopefully you're optimistic.
I was really encouraged by what we saw from Wiseman in the last 2.5 games before his injury. With his timing that he established with Steph in the pick and roll, and the 14 point per game score every night, and all that stuff. The things that I'm concerned about is the rebounding. The Warriors are going to need him to be much better as a rebounder, and obviously the defense. I don't think unless there is a substantially. And by the way, I do view this as a setback, not as an obstacle. I think that and I don't say that because I think he's going to regress, but I say that because the plan was for him to take a substantial leap between year one and year two, and not being able to work out the way that he wanted to, not being able to even play in summer league because his rehab probably won't be over by then. He's not going to be ready by summer league, not being able to have that opportunity. We don't even know if he'll be ready for training, the start of training camp, right? We don't know these things, all that stuff. He's not going to be able to do anymore. That's going to hurt his ability to take that leap that the Warriors were asking for. Now, I will say this, that doesn't mean he can't make that leap by the time the playoffs begin. It just means he probably won't take that leap by the time the regular season starts. So he will need that learning curve, as steep as it is, as it already is and has been, will be even steeper next year. But that doesn't mean he can't do it. It just makes it more of a risky variable. What I think is going to happen with Wiseman is he'll be, by the playoffs next year, he'll be okay. He's not going to be a negative on defense the way he was so much in his rookie year again, because he did start to progress in that area. But I think in year three for James Wiseman, year three is the one I would circle for Wiseman to be a player who can actually help you as opposed to just not get in the way. And that's okay. That's usually the learning curve it takes for most centers. I look at like a DeAndre Ayton for Phoenix. A big reason they are as good as they are this year is because Devin Booker is an all-NBA player and has been for a couple of years. They obviously got Chris Paul. Monty Williams is a hell of a coach. But DeAndre Ayton took a huge leap between year one and year two, and even arguably a bigger one between year two and year three, to the point where now he's helpful for you on both ends. And I think that's what we'll see from Wiseman. But I think the world of him. I think he's got a higher ceiling than DeAndre Ayton too, because I think, like Bram said, Chris Bosh, that's not a bad comp. And I kind of wonder if Wiseman would be better as a power forward, but that's a separate conversation.
That's really interesting, because I think the fit for Wiseman offensively, at least next year, is almost like a power forward with Draymond on the court. If Wiseman can get that shot down, if he can stretch it out to the 3-point line, because I believe in the mid range version, the 3-point I'm not so sold on yet, but I do think he can get there.
Well, the other thing we'd like to see from him is developing in the passing game. You know, unless Kerr's system shifts, one of the things he asks from his five is the ability to read the floor and make the right pass. And that's not, you know, Wiseman was never asked to do that in high school. Who knows if he would have been asked to do that in Memphis? He didn't get enough time. So if this system, I mean, let me put this a different way. The Warriors did, they started playing better when Wiseman got hurt. It has no reflection on Wiseman's talent or future. I think it has a reflection on what I'm saying right now. He didn't fit into that system entirely. This is one of the things we're going to need him to develop in order to, like, if he's going to be playing crunch time minutes as part of a death lineup in Kerr's system.
Still Unlabeled says, I think you're kidding yourself if you think Wiseman will ever be Bosch or David Robinson territory. I don't think he'll ever – yeah, I don't think that's a fair expectation to put on anybody. Chris Bosch and David Robinson are Hall of Famers. Chris Bosch will be in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he isn't yet. Or did he – I don't know.
That's just because you're a Miami fan. But it's too early to go either way, right? I mean, we don't know.
Yeah, that's my thing. Like, he's way too young to be down on him yet. Like, I'm actually really – I'm anti the whole, like, everybody wants to proclaim busts because every, like, in this media ecosphere, everybody wants to have the correct take first and are more worried about first than correct. But, like, I think the same thing happened to, like, Killian Hayes and, like, even the first couple of games of LaMelo. Yeah. Like, it was just kind of like, you got to let these guys cook.
There's no more impatient and lack of a memory group of people than sports fans. I mean, think about, man, and we've talked about this before, but think about what we heard when we thought that the Warriors were going to draft Wiseman. You know, that, look, Project hasn't played for a while. It's going to take a minute to develop. Also, he's a big man. Guards develop faster, so you got to give him 3 or 4 years. All of us nodded. All of us understood it. We all were on board for it. Season starts. What happens? Exactly what they told us. You know, he didn't play. He needs time. He's developing slower than LaMelo Ball because he's a big man. He's not a guard. And instead of remembering what we were told and what all of us expected, everybody freaked the fuck out. You know, but well,
I'll blame the Warriors partly for that because they were saying all that stuff, preaching patience and all this stuff, treating James Wiseman like a luxury. I mean, I'll go even further back, Bram. Remember when it seemed like the Warriors were going to – when they first – the lottery happened and they got the number 2 pick and everybody was like, oh, my God, you're giving these Warriors with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green the second pick in the draft. What a luxury. And instead of treating James Wiseman like a luxury and with patience, they have treated him like a necessity and they've rushed him in that development. And I will blame the Warriors just as much as I would blame anybody looking on. Last point I want to make on Wiseman before we move on to another caller here. If you did a redraft of – the 2020 draft right now, I think the top three, it's the same players. It's in a different order. LaMelo probably goes number one. Anthony Edwards probably goes number two. And Wiseman goes number three. But I don't think that anybody else in the draft is good as Tyrese Halliburton.
Wes, let's say Anthony goes number one and the Warriors are on the clock and LaMelo Ball is still up there. But they, you know, as is Wiseman. Who do the Warriors take?
Knowing everything we know now,
Bob Myers hops in the time machine today and goes back.
I think they would take LaMelo because I think there would be a use for him coming off the bench the way that he did. And the fact that his 3-point shot came around in the NBA, that was one of the biggest concerns that the Warriors had. Yeah.
Most success going small this year, right?
I mean, Kevon Looney is having his best regular season of his career, which can't be sneezed at. Like, if Kevon Looney plays this way and you just bring off, like, one or two other centers behind him and then you go small with Juan Toscano-Anderson, who's been a revelation, with Draymond Green, who's been able to play the five this year in a way that he wasn't last year when he was more banged up. Yeah, I think they'd be like, you know what? As much upside as Wiseman has, we're comfortable with this at center, and we'll just bring LaMelo Ball off the bench and we'll have him and Jordan Poole and, I guess, you know, Kelly Oubre coming off the bench.
I don't think that anybody – honestly, the unsung hero of this season is
Looney. What?
I was saying the unsung hero of this season has been Kevon Looney staying healthy, like playing great defense, even though he can't really jump still. Like, so, like, happy for him because I know he's gone through so much.
I'm not sure – I agree with you. I also am not sure if Loon could jump over a nickel. If there's somebody who I like more who has less of a post game, I'm not sure who it is. But his defense, rebounding, just his general loonness, I'm on board for.
Do we have any more questions before we talk other stuff? One more thing on Bosch, by the way. It took him about 7 or 8 years to become the awesome all-NBA defender that he was. Like, before that, he was just a post scorer and a mid-range shooter. And so if that's the learning curve that it takes for Wiseman, we're a few years away from him being like a real player on defense, but I don't know if that's the case.
he's not getting a chance to really figure out who he is either. He's being forced into a role immediately. I mean, let's assume that this guy's talent is generational. Just for purposes of this conversation, he has the ability to become any player he wants. And let's change the setting. I am teaching Michelangelo how to paint, and I want to figure out how good he could be. You know what I wouldn't do? Tell him what to paint. You just let him figure it out, right? Like, let him get out there and try as many color palettes and feel out what works for him. Wiseman hasn't been given that opportunity. You know, most people in his position, when they're drafted in a top three slot, the team doesn't have specific goals that season outside of developing that player. That's right. Not who the Warriors were. The Warriors came into this with a very specific goal. And, you know, I understand that they had to do that. And I am not taking back what we said earlier. You have to capitalize on Steph, and that's what they're trying to do. But if we're looking at just developing Wiseman, this isn't the best environment to have a player figure out what his ceiling is, what his floor is, just what his game is. He's not getting that chance.
If you flip LaMelo and Wiseman, then does Wiseman go into Charlotte and average 18 points and 8 rebounds a game, while LaMelo is playing 15 minutes off the bench and sort of struggling within the Warriors ecosystem?
That's exactly right.
It's an interesting hypothetical. But to the larger point, given that the Warriors did draft Wiseman and that we're not dealing with hypotheticals, is that the Warriors do need, and Steve Kerr specifically does need, to change the offense. You brought up something earlier, Bram. Can Wiseman learn how to facilitate out of the low block and all these things? No. He's not a passer. Never was. He's not going to be. It's not his skill set. It's not his game. And that's okay. That's a very novel skill set for a center to have. Not everybody is Draymond Green.
Or Andrew Bogut.
Even Andrew Bogut. But if you're going to take a guy at number two the way that the Warriors did, and you're going to hitch your wagon to this player, maybe not to win right now, but to win in 7, 8, 9, 10 years from now, then you better change the offense to meet his needs in a way that, look, he's not Kevin Durant. We all know that. But the level of investment that this franchise has made in James Wiseman is equal to Kevin Durant. And that's not up for debate. And what did the Warriors do when Kevin Durant got there? They changed stuff to fit Kevin Durant. You need to change things to fit James Wiseman, which means more pick and roll, which means more pick and pop, which means less asking him to facilitate and more just letting Steph and Draymond handle that part of the offense. And by the way, they were doing that before Wiseman got hurt. And that was, to me, the crushing part of it, was that we were starting to see that come along. And I do wonder if they're running more pick and roll and more isolation than ever. And that's, by the way, another way to leverage Steph Curry's newfound strengths and all around game. But next year they have to go into the season with an offense that is predicated on that Steph Curry, James Wiseman pick and roll, as much as stubborn as Steve Kerr may be to do that, that you kind of have to do that.
Dude, you're identifying kind of an unspoken truth about this year. So practical reality. If you want to be good something at sports, you need a little bit of time to develop that skill set. We've focused that practical reality so far on Wiseman. We're right. He needs some minutes to figure himself out. But the thing we haven't talked about is Kerr has never been asked, nor has he ever actually done developing a player. That's never happened. You know, they never had a top 10 pick. They never had a top 15 pick. This is as high of a guy as he's ever brought in. And from the moment that Kerr landed here, his system always worked with the personnel. This is the first time that somebody of Wiseman's magnitude is on the team that requires a flip. Of course, it'll take a little bit of time for him to figure it out. And it's one of the downsides, again, of Wiseman getting hurt, is that it's not just Wiseman who's not getting the reps with him out there. Kerr isn't getting the opportunity to see how Wiseman can help and how he can shift his system.
Okay, so I just wanted to know if Wiseman starting next year is a given. Just because, like, this year I've seen Looney be successful with the starting lineup and they be more efficient. And I could see Wiseman kind of being a scoring punch off the bench and maybe give you 12 a night on just kind of efficiency with just, like, putbacks and pick and roll stuff. Just wanted to know what you guys thought about that.
Which would you prefer? Before we answer, if it was left to you, if Bob Myers, when we got off this phone call, gave you a call and was like, hey, I'm not sure what to do here, how would you handle it? What would your response be?
I'd probably start Wiseman coming off the bench, and if he's just doing things that you didn't expect, I think you can always move him into the starting lineup. But I think it'd be kind of crushing to start him again and go through that process where you're, okay, he's not ready on defense. We're not efficient on offense. We're going to move you to the bench again for the second straight year.
Yeah.
So that's what I would do.
Yeah. For the similar rationales, but I'm going in an opposite direction. So, I mean, one of the things we haven't talked about Wiseman is this mentality, man. You know, I so much of all the things I want to see Wiseman do, one of them is learn to smile and enjoy yourself out there, right? And so if I'm right that he would take things hard, I'd like to see him start the season coming off the bench, slowly earn that role, his position, understand the offense, and then get into the starting lineup and stay there into the for the next 20 years, because I'm not sure if he can handle, just as you were saying, if they give him that opportunity again, you're the presumptive starter, then he shits the bed. I don't know what that does to him mentally for a second year. But Wes, you're closer to this. Yeah. How do you think it plays out?
I feel like that ship has maybe sailed on trying to kind of put the cat back in the box, wherever that saying goes. That's not how that saying goes. But
why are you putting cats in boxes?
I put them in boxes all the time. I don't know what you do with your cats. Okay? My cats live in boxes. I should probably check on them though. to put Wiseman back on the bench at this point, I think would hurt his confidence. The Warriors have just been so committed to him so clearly that I don't know that they can go back. I thought the time for that was at the start. I thought they made a mistake by making him the opening day starter before he played a preseason game. I thought that they could have just brought him off the bench for the whole season, two seasons. I didn't think that there was any rush. I thought Kevon Looney was just fine as their starting center. There's no Marquise Chris before the broken leg would have been just fine. I didn't understand the rush to put him in there, but you know, the cat's out of the bag, not the box, the cat's out of the bag. I don't know.
That's it. Let's start a new saying involving cats and boxes though. You don't have to come up with it now, you know, think on it. I'm sure it'll come.
Cat's out of the box. Just out of the box.
Let's get one more question if anybody has one.
What's up, guys?
What's going on?
Hey, man. I was just wondering, like, for next season, since Steph is having a pretty damn good season this year, do you think people, like, from other teams who are maybe free agents this summer are seeing that and are intrigued by maybe joining, like, hey, this guy can prove that he can still win. He's still elite. Like, I want to come to the Warriors. You think there's, like, you know, some saying around the league because Steph has been so good this
year. Let's crescendo to Wes. I'm going to tweak this a little bit because I was literally just bitching about this to my boy recently over drinks. One of the things I'm worried about, man, one of the reasons I want the Warriors to go all in right now, take these draft picks, give Steph help, get another title, is that being a free agent destination team is not a guarantee. You know, we know that as Warrior fans, nobody came here. You know, before David Lee and we had to trade for him, nobody decided to come here. This was not a destination despite it being in California and the Bay Area. And the Warriors' recent success has changed that. You know, they became the Warriors. Draft classes wanted to come here. Free agents knew about us. The buyout market always considered this place. But if they continue to have the kind of success they had last year and this year, if it keeps going, you know, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, they're still kind of a middling 7-8 team, that cachet is going to be gone. There's no guarantee on it. And so that's one of the things they need to perpetuate. These guys need to continue to be at the top of free agents' minds, and you do that only with success. So to answer your question, do I think people want to play with Steph? Fuck yeah, of course. You know, he's not just one of the most talented people we've seen. He's one of the most fun players of this generation. I am sure that guys want to do it, but unless success comes with that, if all the guarantee of playing with Steph is fun, no, I don't think that's enough. I think there needs to be another draw, and that draw is, you know, team success.
It doesn't really matter how good you are as a player. If your team is not having success, and then you're not getting the ring chasers necessarily. Look, there are going to be players that want to play with Steph. There are going to be players that want to live in the Bay Area and be part of the Warriors and all the things that they stand for. But even LeBron, when he got to LA, couldn't get anybody. LeBron got Anthony Davis to LA, and they still couldn't sign any free agents that anybody wanted. Let's remember, nobody wanted Rondo or Dwight Howard. They ended up with Rondo and Dwight Howard. We were all laughing at them. It just happened that it worked out. But those were not their number one options. They couldn't even get the coach that they wanted. They ended up with Frank Vogel, who, and again, all of it worked out, luckily for them. But those were not their first choices in any respect. It took the Lakers winning a championship, even with LeBron, who had won championships, even with Anthony Davis, who everybody understood was one of the next generational talents. It didn't matter how much talent that they had at the top of that roster. Nobody was going to go there without proof. Nobody was going to go there before the beta test. You wanted to see it first and foremost if you were a player. And then what happens? You're able to get Montrezl Harrell. You're able to steal him away from the Clippers. You're able to get Gasol. Marc Gasol. You're able to get all the Dennis Schroeder. You're able to get
Drummond.
Andre Drummond. You're able to get all these guys. So the first thing that the Warriors need to do is win a championship. Obviously, that's going to be very difficult. But with Clay coming back, with Steph playing this way, and if you can make some moves and fill out your roster through and get nine guys who you trust in a playoff setting, again, difficult to do. But that's what they have to do. If you can do that and get a big leap from James Wiseman, then the Warriors can get at least to the finals and show that they're part of that. And then you become a potential landing spot for those kinds of free agents. Now, the other thing is, can they get a superstar to want to come there? That is a little bit different. Anthony Davis wanted to play with LeBron. James Harden wanted to play with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. They didn't need to see the proof before that happened. If Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson can get on their phones and hit up the other play and start tampering a little bit and do what it is that they need to do, and a superstar becomes available, then the Warriors have the goods to make that kind of trade. That is, interestingly, a little bit different. You don't have to prove it for superstar players, because superstar players look at themselves as the solution, the horse that draws the carriage, not somebody that wants to sort of latch on like these other free agents tend to be in the late stages of their career.
I'm a little disappointed that you didn't work in the phrase cat out of the box, but everything else about that answer was fucking dynamite. let me give you three last questions before we bounce. All of them have to do with Clay, and I'm going to phrase them in over-unders. So on the off chance that people out there are not the level of gambling degenerate that I am, over-unders are pretty simple. You give a number, then you have a concept associated with it, and you guess whether or not, you know, that concept is going to be over or under. So here's an example. All of us are thinking Clay, if not the answer next year, is one of the reasons the Warriors ascend back into contention. All right. So let me give you some over-unders for Klay Thompson. Let's start here. It's an 82-game season. Over-under games played for Klay, 65. What do you take, Wes?
Under.
Yeah, me too. You know, if Kevin Durant is the reason why we're all optimistic about Klay's success next year because he looks so good, look at the games played for KD. He's missed a lot of games. There's a good chance for that. All right, over-under. Klay Thompson points per game next year. Put it at 18, over under.
Oh, that's a good number. I'm going to go over. I'm going to go over because there's going to be a real effort to get him involved. I'm going to go over.
I love that. I hope you're right.
It won't be by much. I mean, it might be like 18 and a half, but I think I'll go over.
So I'm going to take a push. You know, I don't know what the hell to expect. I'm optimistic in that he's never needed his legs to score. You know, he's a quick release guy. He doesn't have to beat people off the dribble. So if he's a little slower, a little worse for the wear, I still think he can put it up. And let me give you one last question, over under, and it's an ugly one. Over under championships that Klay Thompson will win over the remainder of his career, 1.5. What do you take?
Under.
How about if I put it at 1?
I don't think you want me to answer that.
That
puts the cat in the box right there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's why, Lyndon, let's just keep it at 1.5. I'll take the under on 1.5, and I'll say it's a push on 1. Let me ask you one last question. I can't help myself. Who wins more titles over the remainder of their career, James Wiseman or Steph Curry?
Steph.
Huh.
More titles?
Yeah, I mean, so they both have zero going forward. yeah, right now, tough. You know, like going forward. I mean, because I'd say push because they're end up on the same team. But do you think unless Wiseman gets traded?
Yeah, unless they trade Wiseman or Steph ends up playing for LaMelo Ball's championship team in Charlotte 8 years from now.
Oh, you motherfucker. You bastard. Right when I thought you couldn't stab me deeper, you piece of shit.
That'll do it for today. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, and say nice things about the show. You can send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them at WGoldberg@BayAreaNewsGroup.com. Thanks again to Bram for joining the show. You can check out his podcast, Warriors Huddle, wherever you get podcasts. So thanks to him, and thanks to you for listening.